And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson. For the first time, Lakeshore Public Media is getting an up-close and personal look at municipal government leaders across the region with our new series, Meet the Mayor. Today, we're in Gary to speak to Mayor Eddie Melton. Gary is a spirited community with a population of almost 70,000 community members, making it the 11th largest city in Indiana. Seated at the southern tip of Lake Michigan, the city offers miles of public beaches, a growing small business community, and world-class entertainment. Home to Miller Beach, a vibrant lakeside neighborhood, Gary brings together a unique mix of options to shop, dine, and have fun. There's Hard Rock Casino for a night out, as well as a flourishing nest of shops and restaurants throughout the community. The Steel City is the birthplace of the Jackson family, including the King of Pop, Michael Jackson, bookends the Indiana Dunes National Park, and serves as the background to the regional campus of Indiana University Northwest. The town is also home to the Gary Railcats Baseball Stadium. Mayor Melton is here to share the latest on infrastructure, the local economy, as well as the growing demand for housing. Today, Mayor Eddie Melton on the City of Gary in his own words. Mayor Melton, I want to spend time talking about you as a mayor and your administration for the duration of our conversation.
So sure.
I want to talk about you specifically, because a lot of people in the region do know you, but we may have some region neighbors that are just kind of unfamiliar with you. So take a moment to spend some time discussing your career in the private sector, in public service, as well as what led you to this office today.
So born and raised right here in Gary, just a few blocks away from City Hall. Attended Horseman High School, played football there. That led me to college at Kentucky State University, which I played football there for a few years. Finished up at Calumet College, St. Joseph, locally. And my first job was with Edgewater Mental Health. So I worked. I've always worked with youth, and you'll see a theme of that throughout my professional career. So working at Edgewater, that helped me kind of build a better understanding of the nonprofits in Northwest Indiana, and especially in the field of mental health. Then from there, I started my own tutoring and mentoring organization. That opened up a door, which I was not expecting, and that was a Legacy Foundation. So I worked at the Legacy Foundation for a number of years as a grant officer. I led their grants and helped lead their scholarship efforts at the Legacy Foundation. That opportunity led me to NIPSCO. For a bit, I was at NIPSCO 15 years prior to taking office here in the mayor's office. So, both on government relations to employee engagement to just helping to lead our corporate citizenship at NIPSCO, that was kind of the path that I took, and in which that service led me into looking at running for office. First position was an appointed position, which was by then Governor Mike Pence, which was on the State Board of Education. Served on the State Board for 2 years, and that's when I decided to run for State Senate. I realized that if you wanted to make long-term substantive change, you have to change policy, especially in the state of Indiana. So that's when I ran for State Senate. My predecessor, Senator Earlene Rogers, God bless her soul, she just passed away, but she was very instrumental and kind of coaching me into getting into that area, and it was no turning back from there.
I want to pivot and talk about safety for a moment, right? Congressman Frank Mervan's request for federal community project funding was approved in the fiscal year 2024 appropriations law, and specifically the Gary Police Department received $264,000 to upgrade technology and equipment. What will this mean for crime-fighting efforts here in the city of Gary?
So, and that's a good question. The way I look at it is, with a city of our size, 52 square miles, the population that we have, a little bit over 70,000 individuals, and a shrinking workforce, both police, fire, and a lot around emergency management services, public safety purposes, we have to look at it in a smarter way. Because we can't police our way to a safer community. We have to look at technology. We have to look at our partners, community groups, and helping us address that. So the funding that Congressmember Van helped us identify is just going to help us make that available to us with the real-time crime center that we have, tapping into various cameras throughout the entire city, help us solve those crimes a lot quicker than usually in the past.
So let me ask you, because when people speak about Gary, a once thriving community, but sadly for its crime rates, the city is obviously doing a turnaround with significant changes. I have to ask you, are there plans to expand the law enforcement, to hire more law enforcement officers?
Yeah, that's going to come with the growth of our community, right?
Okay.
The way you pay for police and fire is you have to have more residents. You have to have more of a tax base.
Right.
So as we grow our tax base, of course, we're going to look to bring more police and fire in. Mm-hmm. But the main thing, which I'll not only campaign on, but I'm showing right now in real time, is how do we protect the ones that we have? How do we keep the ones that we have? Mm-hmm. We have other communities surrounding us that's, I hate to say it this way, that's kind of recruiting and poaching our talent because they know that they're better trained.
Wow.
That they're more skilled at handling a city like Gary, so they're reaching out to them, bringing them to their communities.
Right.
So making sure that if we can't give them a raise, can we give them a bonus? Can we make their work environment and culture a better environment for themselves? So, and just invoking that love and passion for the city to keep them.
That's smart.
In the future, do we want to expand and grow? Absolutely. I would not deny that. But we want to make sure we retain the ones that we have as well, giving them down payment assistance for a home, making sure that we collaborate with them and their families to give them that future.
I want to talk about, because we're speaking about growth for Gary, right? I want to talk about the schools, because we know that when I speak to mayors across the region, one of the things that we discuss is that people who move to a community, they always look at the schools, right? They want to make sure that the quality of life is great. A week or so ago, we had the opportunity to sit down and interview the Gary Community School Corporation's new superintendent, Dr. Yvonne Stokes. And we began to talk about her vision for the school district, the plans that she has, and it sounds like the school district is off to a great start.
Yes.
We're off to a new era. So I want to ask you to take a moment, you yourself, to talk about what's good about the Gary Community School Corporation.
I'm a product of the Gary Schools, right? So I hold them near and dear to my heart. And you've kind of come along this journey with me when I became senator, when it was taken over by the state of Indiana. It's kind of like the story comes full circle when I left the Senate. It comes back to local control. So I think right now the new board that's been established, the new leadership that's established, and the teachers that remain and stay with us through the hard times. I'm always going to be a proponent of tell folks that our greatest strength are the people. Our greatest assets are the people. As a city, no matter if it's, we're talking about our airport, our lakefront, all of the great amenities that we have, the infrastructure, et cetera, if it wasn't for the people of the city of Gary, we wouldn't have a city. And if it wasn't for the passion of those individuals that have loved this city for decades and those that are moving here and finding a new love in the city, I don't know where we would be. So I definitely commend the leadership that's at the school corporation right now that's putting the right path forward. And the public are going to see more of a collaborative nature between the city of Gary and the school city of Gary. And as mayor of the city of Gary, I have to be very aware that the Gary School Corporation is not only an educating institution, right? We have multiple other schools, charter schools, faith-based schools. So that's why I started the Education Roundtable, to put everybody around the table to figure out how can the city partner with the school corporations, and how can we use our platform to encourage them to collaborate as well. So I think just these first few months, we're off to a good start.
Mayor Melton, you have dubbed your hometown under your administration Greater Gary, Indiana.
And I heard you say that if Indiana is the heart of America, then Gary is the heartbeat of America, calling the Steel City the heart and soul. Talk about Gary's great assets, including its port, being a bookend to the Indiana National Dunes Park, the city's proximity to four major highways, the Gary International Airport, and of course, the double track rail line.
Man, I love the doing that. You just reminded me of any time I'm with my peers, other mayors around the country, and I have to remind them of who we are.
That's good.
I have to remind them of not just what we have, but where we've come from. And we've helped build this nation because of the steel industry, because of U.S. Steel, which found this city. And so many individuals from Eastern Europeans to blacks that migrated from the South that worked in the steel mill. We have almost 30,000 people that worked in the city of Gary. We almost had 200,000 people wow. that lived in the city of Gary. We are ingrained not just in Indiana, but throughout the nation mm-hmm. in terms of what we've helped to contribute mm-hmm. to this world. So when we talk about the heart and soul, I'm talking about the grit, the determination, the fight that we've shown over the years, the good and the bad times that helped us get to where we are now and to be resilient mm-hmm. during those tough times, right? So yes, when I sit down with other communities, I talk about no other city that I'm aware of, and not many cities in the Midwest mm-hmm. can say that they have an international airport,
right.
a deep water seaport, 3 class 1 rail lines, 4 major highways, right? They can't say they have 5 miles of recreational beachfront property in right. Lake Michigan. So all of these amenities and natural dunes, you talk about the national park, these are elements and pieces where people travel across the world to come see us. And we haven't in the past been able to capture that. And I appreciate this opportunity because we haven't been able to tell our story the way that we're able to tell it now. And this is our time and our opportunity. And not because it's me, but I think because the world is starting to hear about Gary more on a national level, some of the relationships we've been able to broker both on a federal and a state level, but issues that I'm dealing with and negotiating with a Japanese company that's trying to purchase U.S. Steel with Nippon Steel to figure out how do we better have a relationship with the largest industry mm-hmm. in the city, you know, one of the leading steel manufacturers in the nation in our backyard. So we're in a really good position. We just got to tell our story.
You just spoke about the Gary International Airport, and you spoke about relationships that you are forging locally, statewide, and nationally. And I'm thinking back to a time, I believe it was earlier this summer, if not earlier this year, when you had the opportunity to sit down and meet with Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously sing the praises of the Gary International Airport and offer to them, to the city of Chicago, via their airports Midway and O'Hare, hey, we can take the traffic that you cannot handle. And so I want to ask you, how are the plans for the airport going right now?
You know, first, let me just shout out Mayor Johnson. That's my brother. He's a good man. He's doing a phenomenal job trying to lead the city of Chicago mm-hmm. To his resurgence as well. And one of the last meetings I shared, I said, this is our airport together.
Great.
So I'm happy that there's an appetite to do more okay. and better collaborate. But the reality is we are Chicago's third airport. Back in the early 90s when the compact was signed by then Mayor Daley and Mayor Barnes, that put us in a really strong position. So as we look to grow around private, around cargo, and passenger in the future, those opportunities exist and they continue to grow every single day. You're hearing about the investments that we're making. A lot of it, and I'm grateful for Congressman Mervin, a lot of federal dollars. Also, my last budget session, we were able to finance to help more to build out our infrastructure as well. So the airport is poised and positioned for greatness, but it's not just the airport. You got to look within just a mile radius of the airport. The airport is a foreign trade zone. So if you have a foreign trade zone on top of cargo opportunities to grow, freight, cargo from ship, we can be North America's new hub when it comes down from moving shipments of products from around the world. So
wow.
I see that as a unique opportunity that we're going to be honing in more in the future.
You spoke about this, one of the latest infrastructure projects, and that's the double track line, which was completed in
right.
June. $650 million project, I might add, that will add a second rail line between Gary and Michigan City, correct?
Right.
I want you to spend a moment, because we're speaking about economic development, economic growth, speak about what the long-term economic impact of the double track line will mean for, again, not only Gary,
right.
but for the entire region.
You think about, number one, the investment of $600 million and what that does to a community, right? We had thousands of men and women that had been able to go to work to help build that line, and whether it was moving the rail or putting in the electrical, so many facets to that to help kind of ignite our economy locally. When folks think about our proximity to Chicago, and I tell my friends around the country, I say, if you jump in a car, you'll be downtown Chicago in about 35, 40 minutes. They don't believe me.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can tell them you can jump on a train and be downtown Chicago Millennial Park in 35, 40 minutes. They still don't believe me until they come. So that's something that we have to maximize as a region. And that's no matter if it's Michigan City, Portage, both of those mayors, they are phenomenal. We've sat down and talked to say, how do we better leverage us being the three communities that touch the national park? There's an opportunity that's unlike any other communities in this state that we can partner and collaborate from a tourism perspective. We know that the national park, several millions of people visit that park, right?
Absolutely.
So we have to maximize and leverage that. But as individuals look to leave Illinois, businesses are leaving Illinois. We're getting phone calls from a lot of corporate entities that's looking to relocate throughout Northwest Indiana, and Gary is one of those prime locations.
Right.
They're looking at where the taxes are cheaper. Income taxes are cheaper. Sales taxes are cheaper. Property taxes are cheaper.
That's true.
The cost of living is cheaper. And you can still be to work downtown Chicago in 30 minutes compared to from the south suburbs where it may take you closer to an hour. But if we're not selling that,
good point.
And if we're not promoting that, we're missing a unique opportunity. So the main thing when I came into office was, number one, let's stabilize our economy in the city of Gary specifically. Let's lay the groundwork for future development, which we're doing with Senate Bill 434, so we can start telling our story. And we can let those corporations know the opportunities that exist with our infrastructure and just the residential opportunities as well for folks to live here. It's just a unique time.
Mayor Melton, I want to go back to your first few weeks in office. And even before that, even during the transition period from the previous administration, I remember seeing you travel the region, travel nationally at one point, but sort of kind of singing the gospel, if you will, or spreading the gospel, if you will, about Gary. And I remember back in January, I believe it was, I was at an event in Gary in which you were the keynote speaker. And I was there as a guest, but couldn't help but let the little journalist in me come out. And I began to take notes as you were speaking. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm the Eddie Melton cheerleader, but I have to say that everything that you shared in the keynote address was so compelling. And I remember at one point, these are my words, not yours, but you sort of issued this mayday regarding blight. And you began to talk about collaborations and partnerships with other entities, including the Hard Rock Casino, to address blight in the city of Gary. So talk more about the genesis of some of those partnerships and where we are today in addressing blight.
Yeah, very good question. Very timely as well. When I have to put it into context for folks, that's, we're the same city that was 52 square miles, we're still 52 square miles. So it's a lot of ground to cover. We've lost a significant amount of people and population-wise. And let me preface that by saying this, because some folks will say it was because people were scared, it was crime. No, it's a history with that, with taxes as well.
Okay.
Right? And part of that is, as a corporate citizen, U.S. Steel decided to change legislation and self-assess, and that cut our budget as a city in half. And this was in the early 2000s. So my previous mayors ago, they had to furlough, cut people off, cut departments, let police and fire go because, and I don't want to say it, that they weren't paying their fair share, but they weren't paying their accurate assessment. You fast forward, that shifted over to homeowners, and people were losing their homes because of the property tax value that went up. So that's part of that narrative and story. It's not just the crime.
Just the crime.
It's not just the other aspects that most people would say it is. You have to include the policies that was put in place. Because after that, it was the tax caps in 2009 that also prohibited, it helped the homeowners. But cities had to do more with less revenue because they capped it at 1%, right? So again, that was another blow for a city like Gary that you're doing more with less. So when it comes down to addressing the blight, the last number, I believe in the early mid 2015 was close to 8,000 abandoned structures. That's both residential and commercial. I believe the hardest hit funds was sent by President Obama during the Freeman Wilson administration that helped attack, I would probably say close to 1,000 properties.
Wow.
So it only put a dent,
a small dent
into that. So what we're doing is leveraging the state funding that we have. I've been going to Washington, D.C. I've been talking and meeting with HUD. I've been talking and meeting with everyone within the president's cabinet to figure out how do we better leverage federal funds that we are soliciting, but also how do we better leverage what we currently have on an annual basis. So you're going to see more blight elimination of dangerous structures that need to be gone.
Okay.
Right? That's the
priority. Okay,
yes,
good.
That's the priority. If it's a dangerous structure, if it's burnt out structure, those are the priority structures that we're going to tackle immediately based off the state funding within the transit development district. That's per state law. Right now, we're requesting from the governor, Governor Holcomb, on his way out, if we can partner with the Ready 2.0 grant to say, help us with various neighborhoods to address blight throughout the city of Gary. Okay. So we have a strategy, we have a plan. Right now we're going to execution of getting the funding, mm-hmm. but also how do we better leverage relationships. And when we got in office, this is a story I have to tell, mm-hmm. the Aetna neighborhood, Ruth Riley, Hassey Construction, Sealy Construction, all of these contractors came to us and mm-hmm. volunteered their services. And donated wow. their energy and their resources, and we demolished over 40 structures in the Aetna neighborhood.
Wow.
That right there set it off for us in terms of other corporations wanted to be a partner with the city of Gary.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
This time next year, they have agreed to do the same thing again. And that neighborhood alone
wow.
will be totally blight free. So in just within a 1 year period of time, one neighborhood that had abandoned and burnt out structures would now be blight free. Mm-hmm. And now we're making those lots available for Gary residents to purchase, connecting them with banking institutions to say you can build your new home. So we're moving from neighborhood to neighborhood mm-hmm. to do that the best that we can.
Mayor Melton, we have about a minute or so left today. Mm-hmm. And I always, as part of this Meet the Mayor series, I always give an opportunity for the mayor to kind of pitch their town, to tell our viewing and listening audience, because it's not just viewers and listeners in the region. They come from across the state line. And we have a lot of people that tune in nationally as well. But I always give an opportunity to pitch your town. So take a moment to tell our listening and viewing audience why they should choose Gary as their home.
You know what I would tell them? I say, welcome to Greater Gary, Indiana. The home of the heart and soul of the state of Indiana, but not just Indiana, but the nation. Mm. The same city that helped not only forge the steel, that helped build the skyscrapers, the bridges throughout this country. But we're the same city that sits on the southernmost tip of Lake Michigan, mm. that has some of the most beautiful summers with our Gary Chicago Air Show, with folks taking recreation opportunities on the dunes and touring and looking at our natural habitats of nature, but also the home of Michael Jackson, the Jackson Five. I got to throw Tito in there. That's my brother right there.
Absolutely.
But Denise Williams and so many artistic individuals mm-hmm. that the culture of Gary permeates throughout the entire world. We're the same city that produced those legends. We're the same city mm-hmm. that produced the same steel. We're the same city that has a resilient population that's still here, that is still thriving and striving. And regardless of what the world has said about us and what reputation they've tried to cast over us, we won't let that bring us down. And I guarantee you, Gary will be one of the greatest comeback stories in American history.
Mayor Melton, I must say that I really and truly enjoyed my time with you today. Again, you're quite humble, but you are quite in demand. You're quite busy. And so we don't take it lightly that you carved out a lot of time to be with us today.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing Greater Gary, Indiana. Thank you again for spending time with us on Lakeshore Public Media.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
To hear the full one-hour version of the Meet the Mayor interview with Gary Mayor Eddie Melton, please visit lakeshorepublicmedia.org. You can also find the full video on YouTube and Facebook. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Legacy Foundation is Lake County's community foundation. For over 30 years, we've partnered with donors and nonprofits, focusing on youth development, the arts, the environment, health, literacy, and other causes that matter to you. We're committed to Lake County forever. First Things First, Porter County is dedicated to supporting families, healthy beginnings, and quality early learning, ensuring every Porter County baby is born prepared for a strong start in life. Learn more at firstthingspc.org.
I have a very strong connection to other students. Everyone makes an effort to help each other. I remember the feeling of being here, the feeling that I was a part of a family.
Learn more at pnw.edu.
Additional support for Building Blocks is provided generously by Tom Sorlis and Sue Eleuterio, as well as Porter County Community Foundation, serving Porter County since 1996.
Build up childhood development in Northwest Indiana by supporting Building Blocks. Your donation to Lakeshore Public Media's Early Childhood Initiative will be matched dollar for dollar up to $100,000. Visit lakeshorepublicmedia.org/buildingblocks.
Building Blocks, the podcast, a co-production of Lakeshore Public Media and First Things First Porter County, is dedicated to exploring the science of early childhood development and addressing the challenges that Northwest Indiana encounters. Dr. Mary Jane Eisenhower, Executive Director of First Things First Porter County, explores the vast world of early childhood development as she welcomes local experts, parents, and practitioners to discuss the building blocks for brain and language development. Here's Mary Jane Eisenhower with more.
Here this morning with my guest, Andrea Sherwin. Welcome to Building Blocks, the podcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the organization that you work with.
Absolutely. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. My name is Andrea Sherwin. I'm the president and CEO of Mental Health America of Northwest Indiana. We're an affiliate of Mental Health America National. We serve Lake and Porter County. We are an agency of about 85 wonderful human beings who have a unique focus. About 80% of the work we do is in early intervention and prevention, which we think is a really critical piece of the mental health equation from our agency standpoint. And so we've been serving the community since 1957. A lot of people are surprised to hear that. We've been around a long time. But really since the 1990s, we have focused on that critical piece of working with families in their homes, parents with small children, prenatal to age five, to really help get into homes and build protective factors and help with parental coaching and learning all those wonderful things that help set our children up for success. We also have adult programming. We have group programming. We have some programs we do with the state, but that has been our main emphasis since the 90s, and it's such rewarding work.
It's amazing the work that you do. And
thank you.
This wasn't your original career path. Tell us how you landed in this field of mental health and prevention.
How much time do we have?
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had a really interesting career path. Prior to coming on board as the CEO of Mental Health America, I had a 27, no one do the math, but I had a 27-year career in corporate America. And so I'm a bit of a convert to the nonprofit world. Took my lumps in that transition. Trying to adjust to a whole plethora of things, you know, budgets and really convincing people of my story and my why and how I came about coming to MHA. I served on the board of directors for Mental Health America during my corporate years. It was one of my community service opportunities, and I was on the board of directors for 4.5 years and really started to fall in love with the organization. Just the people, the work, talking to those individuals, our staff members who were boots on the ground doing the work that they were doing, becoming really inspired by their work and the impact they were having in the community. During that time, my family experienced a number of traumatic experiences that we were managing. I have been very vocal about my personal story with my daughter, who is doing great, but she is a suicide survivor. And as we were managing her situation with her and her recovery and moving forward, realizing there are so many other pieces of our world that are really important, and it's the service side of the world. Sometimes when you work in corporate, which I had a wonderful career, I have a lot of colleagues still, all good work, but there was something more that in my heart at that point I felt like I needed to do. And then shortly coming out of that recovery process, both of my parents fell ill, and we went into triage mode and managing their transitions, and I lost both of my parents in 2018 within 3 months of each other. And so that was another awakening I had just personally, saying all these wonderful people, I always say, and I hope it's not, doesn't sound negative, but sort of came out of the woodworks. You know, you're standing there not knowing what to do. You're not, you know, I'm not classically trained in that way. And, you know, you have people coming up to you every 5 minutes saying, hey, my name is Jill, and my job is to sit with you for the next 24 hours and make sure you're okay as you go through these processes. And so really it was an awakening into that service side of the world and understanding that, for me, there was a better way to use your skills and talents, which was to give back to the community. And I remember I had lunch with a friend, a colleague, a bit of a mentor for me. And he said to me one day, this was while I was still in my corporate existence, and he said, you know, how are you really feeling knowing I had been through quite a bit? And I said, you know, I said, I feel like I have taken too much out of the world, and I'm trying to figure out how to put it back. And so there's sort of this give and take to life, right? You know, we have to lean on the resources when we need them. And thank God that people devote their lives to doing that. And they're there to really what I consider helped save my daughter, helped me peacefully transition my parents when they needed support. And I said, I just don't know how to do that in my current, you know, existence or my current version of myself. And he said to me very, very wisely, he said, it's very simple. You're not going to go back and find all those faces and names, and you can't possibly. But if you can find a way in your work or in your volunteerism to give, to do something else and pay it forward, then you'll be in a good position. You'll start to feel better. And that was the night I went home and I dusted off my resume, which I had not done in quite a long time. And I really redid my resume and I posted it to my desktop on my home computer. And I said to the universe, whenever it hits, whenever you bring it to me, I'm going to do it. And it was just within a few months of that, that we found out, and again, I was on the board, that our former CEO, who was wonderful, but was moving to one of our affiliates out in Texas. And so she's a proud CEO of our Houston affiliate out there. And I was with the board president who said, oh my gosh, you know, you don't know anyone who wants to run MHA, a little tongue in cheek, because it was stressful to get that kind of news. And I thought, yeah, I think I do. And that was the moment, right? So that was when I decided there was more I could do with my time and my talents, and threw my hat in the ring. And it's been 6 years as of June this year that I've been in the CEO role and learning as I go, and hopefully positively impacting the organization too.
Oh, absolutely. Andrea, you've done incredible work.
Thank
and
you.
We're so grateful, moving from marketing to mental health.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we think about mental health and it brings up some ideas and images for people. And what would you say is probably the greatest misconception about your work with Mental Health America?
It's funny. If I think about the microcosm of our affiliate, I think the greatest misconception is that the work we do has nothing to do with mental health. And I say that boldly because I remember coming in on the board saying, once I learned about all the programs that MHA did, and I remember saying to the board at that time, I know those programs. I know healthy families and parents as teachers and empowering teens as parents. Why didn't I know MHA was the parent organization bringing those to the community? And I was told at that time, because we really don't talk about our name that much, because people don't understand the why we do the work we do. And so I said, well, if I'm going to come on the board, of course, I have a career in marketing, I'm going to make sure people understand it. So I did my own research. Why did the past leadership of the organization choose this work? Why does MHA National promote their hashtag before stage four? Because it's really important that we're getting to those families early on to prevent that negative life trajectory that can come with adverse experiences and lack of care and support, especially in our underserved communities. And so I have really fought over the last, I would say, 10 years with on the board and as the CEO to really make MHA a household name so that people understand why we do what we do and how the work we do actually does directly correlate with mental health.
That's yeah. I would say you've done well because people know your organization. They know the work that you do.
Yeah.
I wanted to spend some time this morning talking about early relational health and that connection to mental health. Dr. Andrea Jones is a physician at University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. And she says that maternal health and infant health are the greatest predictor of a country's overall health and well-being. And I wonder if you agree with that and from your experience, the ways in which you see maternal health and infant health being played out in our communities.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, it's the work that we do every day. We have a team of 85, and about 55 of those staff members go out in homes and work with parents and children every day, and in many cases, moms and children, in many of our most vulnerable communities. And we see it day to day. If your child does not have that early protective environment from which to grow, there are going to be life experiences and influences both in the home and outside of the home that are going to create that negative trajectory. So we do spend a lot of times working with really families, but all, you know, moms and children, and making sure that no matter what's going on in that household, because again, we serve some really vulnerable households. And my VP of operations, Kim Smith, who's been in this work a long time, she always says, you know, you don't know what you don't know as a parent. And unless you have had a really strong springboard and example of positive parenting and building protective factors, no matter what your family's going through, it's going to have a negative effect on your physical and mental health. I mentioned the before stage four philosophy from Mental Health National, and we tag it all the time as much as we can on social, because it's such a simple thing to remember. You know, much like a physical ailment, if you can help it, you don't want to wait until stage four to try to treat it, right? Mm-hmm. We know it's much more costly, much less effective in the end. And so we have the before stage four philosophy for mental health, which is let's start at the beginning. And I think it's just such a very simple concept, and it ties into everything we do. So of course, if we're starting in the beginning, we absolutely have to take care of moms and babies, right? That's the starting point.
That is absolutely the starting point. And so that's where you and I have connected, I think, in thinking about how do we elevate and amplify the importance of starting early. And so maybe talk about some of the initiatives that you've seen across Northwest Indiana that really elevate that early relational health and promote those relationships between parents and children.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think about my time as the CEO so far as sort of pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, right? And so I can speak to either end of that, but also sort of what bridges we've built during that process. Because I felt like when I first came on board in 2018, we're making a lot of progress. Everything was very much about our own agency and what we needed to do. And that was a wonderful exploratory and building time. And then we all had, you know, COVID, and we had the pandemic, and everybody, I always say everyone had to go home for a while, right? And for some of our families, that wasn't the most ideal place to be. And that's hard. And so that exacerbated a lot of that mental health strain and emotional strain. We know that that had some significant and permanent shifts in our work ethics, in our work desires, in what we were doing with family. You know, some people went home and said, I kind of like it here and I want to stay here. And some people went home and said, this is a horrible place for me to be. And so I think as we all sort of came out of our houses, you know, I don't want to say after the pandemic, because I think it's a permanent part of us now. But as we all came out of that, we really had to look at what ways are we going to move forward as a community, because I think that the impact was so far-reaching and so invasive into every aspect of our lives that what I've seen since then is kind of like what we're doing today is collaboration. And there's a lot of collaboration that went on before, but I think there's a deeper necessity for that collaboration. And there are so many amazing agencies and organizations in Lake County and Porter County who are doing a lot of this type of work or pieces of this work. Mm-hmm. And if you imagine, like, I don't quilt. I'm not handy that way. But if I was literally making a quilt, you could literally take and have enough material from all the agencies and organizations we have in Lake and Porter County to put together this beautiful tapestry of support for families. And that's what I see happening now. I see it happening through the work you're doing with First Things First. I see it in my own work as we're calling other local CEOs saying, hey, maybe we can get together on this. You guys are doing this. We're doing this. Let's meet in the middle and see if there's another gap and maybe we can layer someone else in. So that to me has been one of the most spectacular move forwards that we've had. I don't think we've all mastered it yet, but I think we're definitely on our way. And who benefits are the people that we're serving, which in a lot of cases are the same people, right?
That's right.
In different ways. But if we can build that network around them, our community only has a chance to grow from there.
So thinking about that idea of collaboration and really for the benefit of our youngest citizens, our infants and toddlers, our newborns, new families, you know, what do you see on the horizon? What do you see as hopeful for those relationships and building those relationships?
Yeah, I think specific to collaboration, I think we're offering a stronger level of network and support for families. A lot in the past had to do with, I'm going to say the consumer or the family in this case, having to figure out on their own where to go for support and for help. And maybe they didn't hit all the possible the help spots that they could, because you're going to research and you're going to go to one. But I think creating sort of these collaborations or hubs of support, it becomes about the community informing the family. Here's everything that's available. Let's make sure we have you in the right spot so that you can get what you need. So I think that's a shift. Instead of putting the onus on the family, let's all stand around the family and help them in the best way we can. And there's, you know, it's funny because I think about that and there's no place for ego in this as independent agencies and organizations, because if you're truly mission driven, your job is to support the family. And if you're not the best agency, you have to have the bandwidth to say, you know what, I'm going to pass this person over here because my number one goal is that family gets the support, instead of, you know, everyone trying to like, oh no, we'll just take care of them. But it's about what's best for the family. And I love that.
It really is. It's about building relationships, isn't it?
Yes.
So oftentimes, you know, as we've entered into this space and we're supporting very, very young children, newborns, and even at the prenatal stage, I'm reminded of a question that I've often posed to others, and that is, how do you make friends with a baby?
That is a great question. That's a great question. And probably my home visitors would be better to answer that question. But I can draw on some examples that I've seen and heard from my team. And I think that, you know, how do we make friends with each other, right? It's not ignoring each other. It's smiling and it's engaging and being on the same level. And so sometimes that means I'm going to get down on the floor and I'm going to be at eye level with that baby. I'm going to engage. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to do the things that help them understand that response mechanism and that socialization piece of it. I've heard numerous stories about new moms where we've gone in and, you know, mom maybe's watching TV and the baby's in a bouncer. And this is not an insult against those moms, but they haven't had someone tell them, no, you have to interact with baby. And so often we hear, well, they don't do anything, you know,
and
their world is limited at first, but it's our job and our responsibility to expand that world for them. And so the beauty of the work that our team does is goes in and explores that with mom and dad and grandma and whoever's in the house. We have, you know, families are made in all sorts of ways, and to really engage them and give them those guidelines and those bumpers and trial and error and say, this is why that's important. Reading. I mean, it's so important, even at a young age, even, you know, before baby's born, to be reading and exposing them to language and thoughts and how that all transpires. You know, we go from the black and white books, which are very much made for, you know, for those first early parts of their life, to really continuing books. Books is a big part of what we do. So we actually have some wonderful benefactors who donate books, and we're able to give families. We always try to, you know, when we can, leave behind books and make sure we're reading, and it's all about engagement. So I don't know that making friends with babies should be any more difficult or confusing than making friends with, I think it's harder to make friends with adults sometimes.
Yes.
But it's about letting your guard down and trusting in the process, I think, and just really it's that engagement piece and understanding that they may not be able to verbalize back to you, but those synapses are going and you're helping build those.
And that reciprocity of friendship,
yes,
right? You're getting something, they're getting something, and it's that back and forth, which is so beautiful.
Yeah. Plus, I think it builds that. It's a trust and safety, too. Absolutely. You know who your community is, right? That's someone who loves me and who I can trust and I can grow with, and then you build those really strong connections, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I know in the past we've talked about times when maybe that safety and trust isn't there, and you've had some opportunities to work with families in situations that, you know, maybe unfamiliar to you or uncomfortable. And how do you, maybe you want to describe something that you've seen?
Yeah, I can. When I first came on, so we talked about my background being a little different, and I honor where my smarts start and stop as far as the work we do. And so I really do give all the credit to the team. But I did take the time when I came in as CEO and I went on some shadows. I wanted to see every process, every role, role. And so I went with our FRS team and we went to the hospital and I saw how we were doing the work with new moms. I mean, I'm sure as a mom myself, like, I'm sure that nothing is more exciting than having someone barge into your hospital room and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so from MHA. But it works. We're there to offer support. And then I did go on home visits. And I have to say it is the most difficult and amazing thing I've seen, the work that our home visitors do. And much like other segments of our society, you know, and not to get into anything political, but, you know, are we putting enough emphasis and value and financial support behind those jobs that really are making that critical difference? And I would say if anyone went on a home shadow with one of our people, they would see the need for supporting those roles. But, you know, I can probably the strongest example I can share with it without, you know, divulging any private information is going into, just to give you an idea, I talked earlier about, you know, parents don't know what they don't know, and going into a home where there was a family, there were five children, three were at school, there was a toddler and there was a newborn. And my role was just to observe. I was learning, you know, from my team. And I went in with our home visitor and there was the mom and the baby and dad, and there was another older male in the home. And I remember sitting through the home visit, and about three-fourths of the way through, one of the men said, "Oh, give me the baby. We want to show you our new game." And our home visitor very wisely said, "Well, tell me what the game is first before we see what it is." And he and the other gentleman had stood up, you know, a distance in the living room. And he said, "Well, we call this throw the baby or catch the baby." Maybe it was. But it was the premise was that that in theory, we're going to play catch with the newborn. And so I don't say that to embarrass anyone or to point out how horrific that moment was, because in that moment, you're, thank God we were here. And it was a learning opportunity for that family. But again, not knowing what you don't know, right? And again, we're in some of the most vulnerable households in Northwest Indiana doing the work that a lot of people probably wouldn't do, and teaching and helping that family thrive and learn what is appropriate and how we engage with baby in a way that is productive and honors their physical and mental health in the process. And I think that many stories stick with me, and many of our amazing stories stick with me. That one sticks with me as far as the why and why it's important that we are a trusted resource in the home, making sure that families are getting the benefit of that education and support.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, thank goodness that you had that relationship with the family, that home visitor was able to be there. And you think, families don't know what they don't know. And if that was a game that they were familiar with, or if that was an experience that they had and they thought, this is just what we do. Yeah. And so changing the narrative, changing the stories about what we do with our little ones and how we support their growth and development.
Absolutely. We talk a lot about creating meaningful generational change. And so what you said is so important. We all grew up a certain way, and some people had a better benefit in the way they grew up and some didn't, but we will tend to repeat those cycles. And so I like to think that we are going into breaking cycles, because we're teaching not just mom and dad, we're teaching grandparents that are in the home, older siblings will, you know, we have an ancillary work with, just through public education as well.
And getting that word out there. And that is what early relational health really is about. It's that give and take. It's that building of trust and security and a sense of these are my people, back and forth. So I guess thinking about what is one lesson in your work across your career that you have learned that you feel like everybody at some point in their own career should learn?
The first word for me that comes to mind is humility. And I think if I had more time to think about that question, it might be a different one. But I think that's been the big thing, you know, coming from corporate, coming into nonprofit, you know, there's a complete mind and heart shift. And I'm not saying you don't have it in corporate, but when I've had to focus on it from a career standpoint, I think understanding that we don't all know everything and that there is a constant need to challenge our own learnings and challenge ourselves to learn more. You know, every day in our world is about being better. It's about building blocks, you know, to borrow the name of the show. But it's about what can we do better today that we didn't do yesterday. And I think that rings true. It rings true for me as a CEO. It rings true for, you know, work, you know, the people who do the work. And I think it rings true for families because we're teaching them, it's okay if you messed up yesterday, we're going to do something better today. Mm-hmm. And so being able to have that spirit of humility to say, I don't know everything, but I have all this beautiful support in the community that can help me learn and get to that next step, and then the next step, and the next step, and we start to really build, you know, an empowered and educated community that supports our youngest citizens.
And that comes right back to this idea that the values of our community are really reflected in how we treat our mothers and our babies.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So love that.
That's great. Anything else that you want to share with us before we...
I just appreciate the opportunity to be here. We are one of many who are doing this fabulous work. I know you're going to talk to other agencies. You know, I always say, I don't say, my team says there's no bad referral to MHA. And I think that's true because we, like I said before, we have built those partnerships to know where to send someone if we're unable to support or help them because it's something that's not in our wheelhouse. So I think just an encouragement to our community leaders to continue collaboration, to our business and organizational leaders to continue to help us fund those initiatives on a local level and advocate at a state and national level for mental health supports and for early childhood education and protection and experiences. I think those are all critical.
The future seems really bright for our youngest children as we build these blocks for
Absolutely.
Their future in Northwest Indiana. Any words of hope that you want to give families as they think about starting their family, working with their youngest children and their older siblings?
Absolutely. It sounds a little trite to say, but they're not alone. And I can say that with confidence that they are not alone. You know, I can remember being a new parent coming home. We all talk about, like, what in the world? How did they entrust this little child to me? And what do I do next? And just, I think, knowing that there are community resources that can help. And that help in a non-threatening way. It's not a punishment to have help come into your home and say, let's see how we're doing. Let's see how baby's progressing. It's you know, it's the old, it takes a village, and we are the village, and now we're responsible for the village, right? And so I think that families, you know, it's important for them to know that there's help, there's support, and it's all from a place of love and care for our community, in what we hope is a non-invasive way, so that no one ever feels like they have to go it alone.
That's so important. Yeah. Families are it's really hard, no matter what your zip code, your address.
Absolutely.
It's really difficult. So thank you so much for being here and spending this time with us.
Pleasure. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Building Blocks, the podcast, is a co-production of Lakeshore Public Media and First Things First Porter County. For more information on Building Blocks, including this podcast, as well as the television show, visit lakeshorepublicmedia.org/buildingblocks.
Legacy Foundation is Lake County's community foundation. For over 30 years, we've partnered with donors and nonprofits, focusing on youth development, the arts, the environment, health, literacy, and other causes that matter to you. We're committed to Lake County forever. First Things First, Porter County is dedicated to supporting families, healthy beginnings, and quality early learning, ensuring every Porter County baby is born prepared for a strong start in life. Learn more at firstthingspc.org.
I have a very strong connection to other students. Everyone makes an effort to help each other. I remember the feeling of being here, the feeling that I was a part of a family.
Learn more at pnw.edu.
Additional support for Building Blocks is provided generously by Tom Sorlis and Sue Eleuterio, as well as Porter County Community Foundation, serving Porter County since 1996.
Build up childhood development in Northwest Indiana by supporting Building Blocks. Your donation to Lakeshore Public Media's Early Childhood Initiative will be matched dollar for dollar up to $100,000. Visit lakeshorepublicmedia.org/buildingblocks.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Mary Jane Eisenhower, host of the Building Blocks podcast, and from the city of Gary, Gary Mayor Eddie Melton. And we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.